Is the mic on?
Episode 110. What's wrong with Orny Adams? We have lost our minds. I'm editing my own special, and I notice on stage I say that a lot. And I think I mean it. I mean, collectively as a species, humans have gone wacko. I was at Ralph's. For those that don't live in California, maybe it's other places, Ralph's is a grocery store. And I was there the other day shopping, and a fight broke out between a person giving out samples and the person receiving the samples. This guy said the samples weren't fresh enough and told the woman to go back and make new samples. She was doing like cheese and crackers with something else on top, and they were sitting on a tray, and he kept insisting, they're not fresh enough. Go make me a new one. And she's like, sir, you can leave now. And he said, no, make me a new. He was demanding a fresh sample. And I'm watching him, and he can see me watching him, and he doesn't seem to mind that he's an embarrassment to the human species. Then yesterday, I went to Paquito Mas, a small chain Mexican restaurant that I love, and a fight broke out between a guy. Well, you know this is going to happen. The guy's ordering just beans with cheese on top. That's all he said. I just want a cup of beans with cheese, and it was $3.99. And I'm behind him as he was ordering, and I'm like, that's all he's getting? And it's a charge-only place, and they would only take... he only had cash, so that became the first issue. Then he turns around, he looks at a guy, and he says, hey, that's my table. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? You can't reserve tables. He goes, my keys are on the table. And there, of course, there are no keys on the table. But that's where we're at. What's wrong with Orny Adams, episode 110? We've lost our minds. Sitting in today with me, former FBI profiler Jim Clemente. Jim, something else is going on with Fig Newtons. I forgot to bring them out, but they've gotten smaller.
Really?
And they taste more like chemical now. I don't know what's going on.
Do you know that Fig Newtons has a certain percentage of wasp parts that they're allowed in the fig part of it? Because the wasps help ferment it or something like that?
Yes, this came up on another episode. Yeah.
I don't want to eat wasps.
Well, they go in there and they die, and then we turn them into Fig Newtons.
Great.
Do you know that Fig Newtons, the original Fig Newtons, were the only variety available until the 1980s? And then in 2012, Nabisco made several varieties. They just started calling them Newtons. They have apple, cinnamon, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, blueberry, and mixed berry. In case you don't know about your Fig Newtons, here's the thing. In the 19th century, many physicians believed that most illnesses were related to digestive problems and recommended a daily intake of biscuits and fruit. Fig rolls were the ideal solution to this advice. They were locally produced and a handmade product brought to the U.S. by British immigrants.
And is that around the time when sort of the oil companies, or actually one oil company, because he basically ran everything, he's the one that said, that discovered that you could make pharmaceuticals out of oil byproducts. And so he started this whole campaign of no more holistic medicine. Everything has to be, you know, manufactured chemical medicines. And that's how modern medicine started. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
It's horrible.
What would you do if you saw a guy fighting over samples?
Well, I would stand on the side of the person who's handing out the samples, and I would say, you're bothering this lady or a man, and I would say, it's time for you to leave.
Wow, you're a real man.
Well, I would do that because, I mean, come on, she might have been scared by this guy who could have gotten out of control.
He I was scared by the guy.
Really?
But aren't you afraid it might elevate from there?
Yeah, but, I mean, like I said, I would just try to get between them so she didn't get hurt, that's all.
Mm. You know? And if it did escalate and a fight broke out and you were on the ground, do we call 911 and say, officer down? Or because you're former, do we have to say former officer down?
Yeah, you probably have to say former now.
Okay.
Yeah. But thank you for wondering about the terminology and wanting to get it right.
Well, you know, I have a history with calling 911 and screwing it up.
I do know that.
So I want to get it right. So if a retired police officer is on the ground, you have to say, former officer down. What's the code for that?
Well, in New York, it was 1013. It's officer needs assistance. So okay. So you have to say former 1013.
Former 1013. We have a 1013 with an asterisk. We have an asterisk, former, he says he's retired. He's on the ground. He looks very retired right now.
How big does this asterisk have to be? I know we had a discussion about that before, about asterisks and specials. And, you know, when you won that thing, that coffee, tea place.
Oh,
thing,
yeah.
And then there was an asterisk involved.
Right. So what happened was Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, another California institution, sent me a notification in December saying that I had won a free cup of coffee for like 2 months.
I know.
And then a few hours
every day.
Yeah. Then a few hours later, it was retracted.
The big ups. Oops.
Yeah. Good memory.
Yeah.
But the asterisk is always, it should be as big as the biggest print on the notification.
It should be, because otherwise it gets lost, which is what happened.
Yeah.
And you didn't get to collect your measly one coffee.
Don't you think that you can assume anybody going into a restaurant just or ordering beans, not even rice and beans, just beans, we got a situation?
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Whenever you have a public conveyance, anything that deals with the public, whether it's transportation, lodging, or food, or sales, right? Any of those things, you're always going to have, you know, random people come in, and that will include the small percentage of people that are not all there.
Yeah.
And some of them have serious mental illnesses. Some of them just have personality defects.
Mm-hmm.
Some just, you know, they may be on some kind of substance which alters their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of things that any of these kinds of proprietors has to deal with all the time.
Yeah.
So you should be ready for it.
But I have seen an uptick in instances like this. I'm afraid to leave the house. Like even up in, people just stop in the middle of the street. They don't care. Like the other day, a guy was in front of me and there were two lanes. And you know when like you can go left and then one lane is going to go straight? I'm
right in
the go left lane. And it's green and car after car is going. The guy in front of me is clearly on his phone or distracted from something. And I give a little, doesn't move. And then cars keep going by me on the right. I go, still doesn't move. Right? Finally, he goes. I would say eight cars went through the green light successfully to his right. He's not even peripherally noticing that there's movement.
He was just on his phone the whole time.
Yeah. So he finally goes, and I notice that right, the first car in the incoming traffic towards us is a cop. He had to have seen the whole thing. Doesn't do anything.
Well, yeah, well, that's discretionary, I guess.
It is?
Yeah, because, well, you know, if somebody's life was at risk, then it probably wouldn't be. But at that point, I think
my impatience were at risk.
Your impatience. Yes, I bet they were.
Yeah.
So you're afraid to come out. I think.
To go out.
All right. But I think that is all. What you're describing is all what I told you about, this sort of critical point that everyone in the country, in fact, most of the world, is at this critical point because of COVID, because we got locked down and everybody was under so much stress and nobody knew what this evil, you know, invisible monster was that was killing people and mm-hmm. nobody wanted to interact. And I think all that stress, you're still going to see residuals from that. According to my friends who are psychologists, you're still going to see residuals from that for you know, another 2, 3, 4 years.
Come on.
I'm serious.
How can they quantify it?
Because they've done studies, and when there's trauma,
mm-hmm.
there's sort of a 5-year window afterwards where people sort of start to act out on that trauma, you know, on the unresolved trauma. And I think that the country has a lot of unresolved trauma, so everybody's right at the pinnacle of their stress levels, and so the tiniest thing can set them off.
And is there anything we can do to expedite the healing?
Smile more.
Oh,
more
no,
comedy.
I'm in trouble.
No, come on. No, you're one of the cures.
Is there a chance we never recover from this?
Oh, I don't think that's true. I think humans are very adaptive and I think resilient. I think we'll be fine in a couple of years if we can get through this next election and all this, you know, war stuff that's pending.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll get through that without any major world wars, and then I think we'll be fine.
You do?
Yeah. I'm
You're optimistic.
I'm optimistic about that, yeah.
I'm not.
Well,
I think we may never return. I'm seeing such bad behavior, such selfish behavior, and I see it more here in Los Angeles than when I travel. I just see, in small places, even you go to the gym, there's just people sitting on equipment on their phones, not even looking up to see if somebody else wants this piece of equipment.
They're in their own world.
Driving, people eating out, people in general are aggressive.
But you're not, so that's okay.
I'm fully aware of how my actions affect other people.
Okay.
You know that.
I know.
Probably too much.
I know. What I'm saying is there is a time period where these people are going to go through this, and hopefully it's not going to spill over too much. But, you know, yeah, there is. You already see some of the spillover.
Mm.
I mean, it's a rough world right now.
Yeah, I think it is. In the economy, and it's always something. It's always something. Here's something. I don't discuss my personal life often, but the woman that I'm dating says in public that I nod at people a lot. I give a little... I'm very aware when people notice me.
So you're empathetic?
I don't think it's empathetic. First of all, I want to know that who around me knows who I am.
So that's part of situational awareness then.
Okay. So I'm very sort of, I spent my entire life not being noticed or recognized or, if you want to call it, famous. And so I know what it's like when people don't know who you are. I know what a double take is. I know when someone stops, their eyes stop a little bit more on you.
Right.
And I was at the gym once. Years ago, and
once
Jeff
you went to the gym once. Wow!
Clearly,
no wonder.
Look at me. Clearly, and one time I saw Jeff Goldblum, and he gave me the nod. And Matt Mosca in high school used to do the nod.
Oh, really?
So I have adopted the nod.
You've adopted the nod.
I just feel like
you're a nod adopter.
Well, if somebody goes like, you know, I go, hey, you know,
yeah.
And she says,
you probably make their day when you do that.
That's what I think. She thinks I want the attention. She thinks, I don't know exactly what she thinks, but I get accused of doing the nod, and she thinks I initiate the nod. She thinks sometimes I'm leading people into the nod, which
you
I'm not.
Going like this?
Yeah, I'm like, hey! So yesterday, when I was at Boquito Mas, after the guy blew up about the beans.
Right, and the keys.
And the keys, and he didn't, and by the way, he... It was $3.99, a little bit more with tax. I would have offered to pay if he didn't start yelling at people behind him. Meanwhile, plenty of open tables.
Right.
And he didn't
have...
That
was his.
Yeah, he didn't have keys. Thank God he's not driving. That's what I thought. And I went and I sat outside, and there was a table of six gentlemen to my left. I didn't look at them. I didn't... Normally, I check in to make sure, because sometimes people sneak pictures of me. You know,
really?
They observe my behavior and later...
People watching you?
They're watching me.
Really?
Yeah, they're watching me right now. Jim, the crazy people are watching me. But these people weren't crazy. But here's the thing. I didn't look at them the whole time. I could sort of hear peripherally what their discussion was. And
every now and then, yeah.
Yeah.
Invariably, when I'm in a restaurant or a diner, I hear somebody say FBI. And you always...
Really? I go under the table.
Oh, really?
You do hear people, you get recognized and they say FBI?
Well, not necessarily me being recognized, but it's just a topic of conversation a lot.
And
anytime somebody says FBI, I perk up because when I was undercover, obviously I had to worry about people realizing that I was FBI. So I think it's just something that I have a pathway in my brain that really picks up those three sounds together. And then, you know, I focus on it.
Yeah.
You know, because we learned how to focus on conversations.
Yeah.
In other words, you can be in a very crowded place, but you could actually focus on one voice in that place and find out what the hell they're saying, even though there's all sorts of noises going on. That's a trait that
What is that called?
We train. Well, it's called active listening. It's part of active listening.
Hmm. Interesting. It's almost like highlights, things that are highlighted in their conversation and go to your brain.
Right. But what I'm saying is you can actually focus. Your brain can actually discern one train of thought or one voice in a conversation. And you can actually focus on that and get everything that they're saying, even though if I asked you to listen to everything that's happening, you'll be like hitting snippets here, snippets there, snippets there. But if I told you, focus on the woman with that high-pitched voice, you'd be able to do it and tell me everything she said. Mm. That's how good the human mind is. It can discern that stuff. And when you're a professional in a particular field, you know, let's say you're leading an orchestra, you could pick out every little flat note or sharp note from anybody in that orchestra because you've trained your brain to do that.
Right.
It's developed neural pathways that allow that to happen.
Well, I've trained my brain to recognize when it's time to do a head nod.
I know. Well,
it's very subtle. Let me do it into the camera just show you what it is. It's very just so I'm walking. I go, I just acknowledge you know me.
Right.
And it's very different. And I grew up in a small town and we said hi to people that even didn't know us.
Right.
So what's the worst thing that happens? I've initiated a nice gesture
right.
to somebody. I'm trying to help us get out of this COVID slump.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know if your significant other thinks it's a bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
She does.
Yeah, thinks it's desperate.
Really?
Oh. So I decided as an activity to not look at my surroundings and sort of suss out who might know me. And yesterday at Poquito Mas, and these six gentlemen got up. I was sitting alone, and a guy took his phone, shoved it in my face, and said, look, I subscribed. And he had subscribed to my page.
During his dinner?
But I didn't. It was lunch. I didn't know the guy knew me. I don't know how the guy. I'd like to know that. I my dad was a market researcher. I'd like to, like, if I had known, they'd go, hey, Orny, right? Yeah. How do you know me? Oh, I listened to you on this, or I know your comedy. I've seen you on YouTube. I saw Teen Wolf. Whatever it is, I like to do the market research, do some follow up. I've been denied this because I've been shamed for the head nod.
But let's go back a little behaviorally there.
Yes.
What do you think the reason was that he wanted to show you that he followed you?
I don't know.
Well, I think it's that, you know, when people meet somebody who's famous.
Yeah.
I've touched a famous person.
Exactly.
Now.
We just fist bumped.
Yeah. They get a little lift in life. You know, they it's a braggable moment. It's something they could tell their friends about. He wanted you to be aware of it because then you reflected back onto him in a way that was grateful, right? Yeah. So it's a positive experience.
I don't know, because what happened was I don't think I handled it correctly. Because
what did you do? Did you smack him in the face?
First of all, it happened so fast. Guy puts the phone in my face. My vision is not what it used to be. So I'm sort of like trying to focus in. Is it me? Yeah. What did he subscribe to? I don't know. Like, I want to know, was it my YouTube? Was it my Instagram? Was it TikTok? What did you subscribe to? And then he's walking off, and I didn't say thank you. I said, well, you better come to our show now. And I don't know if that was the right thing to say. I think I was supposed to say, hey, thanks, or...
Probably. I don't know how he took it. If he took it like, okay, that's your kind of humor,
right?
And so that's what I expected, then maybe that's great. But you can't be responsible for how everybody takes everything you say and do.
I am.
It's not, yeah, but you're not, it's not possible.
That's why I am what I am on stage. I am concerned with everybody all over the entire, you know,
I know
audience.
The feeling, yeah. I mean, especially when you have a big audience and there's one person.
Yeah.
You just, it's amazing because your vision, it's amazing how you can scan a room and you see the one person who's not responding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like this person could be, you know, totally thinking about something their wife said to them earlier in the day. It has nothing to do with not responding to what you're saying or doing, but it throws you off.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, we'll get into it in the end because I will be discussing at the end of this episode something that I stumbled upon last night.
Did you stumble upon something?
Yeah.
Did you hurt yourself?
No, it's cultural bound syndromes.
Cultural bound.
You may not know what it is.
I just learned last night. Can educate me.
Yeah. Now, we just fist bumped. I've noticed the need for people to fist bump strangers as if they're part of something is remarkable. People, I see at the gym, they just walk up to strangers and just fist bump like, hey, I'm part of something.
Yeah, well, like, hey, I'm working out too, and I'm like big like you are and things like that. Yeah, people want to be, they want to feel like they're part of something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very, we are, it's, as a human race, we do tend to like to couple and then have, you know, community and things like that. And that's a normal human reaction. People generally don't want to be alone. But then there's some outliers.
I don't mind being alone a lot.
Well, there you go.
I think you do too.
No, I can handle being alone.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah.
I mean, I like being able to have my space when I want my space, but I also like being social. And yeah. A number of my friends say that when I'm out for walks or when I'm driving, I wave to people. I say hi.
No, you're very social.
And some people, you know, completely ignore you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I say, gee, thanks, you know, or whatever. Or if I hold the door for somebody, I say, and they don't acknowledge the fact that somebody just stopped and held the door for them.
Right.
Sometimes I'll say, you're welcome, you know, just to be, you know, a little bit of pain, you know, maybe. But anyway,
you don't know if that person that you held the door for that didn't thank you got into a fight with his wife that day.
I know.
You don't know what his reaction is.
I know,
really.
But I do think that still when you're in public, there should be certain, I don't know, social norms followed. That's all. Politeness. That's how I was raised. And I expect other people to act similarly.
You're expecting way too much of humanity at this point.
I get it.
Jim Clemente,
yes,
is hanging with me today.
I always love hanging with you, man.
Yeah, a lot of criticism last time. Wow.
Really?
Well, you got up and left in the middle of the podcast.
Oh, was there a lot of criticism? Oh,
the feedback was just enormous.
Did they understand that I had an engagement that I had to be at?
Maybe you should tell us, me. I don't have a crew.
Well, maybe you should tell me in advance how long you're actually planning on doing.
We never talk less than an hour and 15 minutes.
Well,
and then,
it was like an hour, I think I stayed.
Yeah, I felt...
And I had my sister with me.
Right.
I felt a little bit...
She was having a blast out there. That's all she can talk about now, still to this day.
She keeps laughing. Yeah. She kept laughing. Yes. She was supposed to be quiet. She kept laughing so loud.
Well,
I love it.
I would take an audience in here if I could fit them. That's for
you know,
sure.
I was thinking, you know, I'm getting one of those vans. And so this is going to be like my living space.
Getting like a Sprinter?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Where are you going with this?
All over the country. I've been to 49 of the 50 states. Never been to North Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There was no serial crimes in North Dakota or something while I was in the FBI or something.
Oh.
But I never went there. But most of the other states, I've been to, you know, I've driven across country a couple times. But most of the other states that I've been to and stayed in have been for work.
Mm.
So I didn't get a chance to actually, you know, meet the people and you know, do some of the highlights of and taste some of the food and see some of the sights. That's what I want to do.
What kind of food do you think you're getting in North Dakota?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's probably, you know, I don't know, chicken fried steak or something. I don't know, something like that. I don't know what they have there.
Kansas, they have that.
I know they have it in Arkansas.
Chicken fried steak.
I can't believe the first time I went to Arkansas, and the first thing somebody said to me when I got there was, you hunt much?
Ooh.
And I'm like... yeah, we hunt rats in the subway all the time. Yeah. I mean, is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
But anyway, and then I went to dinner and they asked me if I wanted chicken fried steak. I said, I want chicken, but like, is there any that isn't? And I don't understand the steak part of it.
Hmm.
She goes, you take the steak and you put it in batter and you put it in hot oil and you fry it. I was like, oh, no, thank you. I'm not going to eat that probably.
Yeah, Jim Clemente,
seems a little heavy.
You don't eat steak, no. Caffeine, or ice. Yeah. Learned that today. I put ice in Jim's water because I thought as the podcast progressed, the ice would melt.
Really?
Yeah.
So and it cold would, you water, would, actually, yeah. This is something that happened when I was, when I threw my bone marrow transplant. Cold water bothers me now. And, you know, a lot of things changed when I went through that bone marrow transplant. And I was going on in November, it will be 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, things change when you have a major, you know, medical procedure like that done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, months of chemo and high-dose chemo and super high-dose chemo and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, isolation and no no immune system for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine? If I didn't have that, I never would have met you. The world would not be as good a place
and,
in my mind.
No. And you also had a heart attack.
I did have a heart attack. And recently I had another scare. I had another cancer scare. But turns out I'm cancer free. And, you know, I'm...
you had a little procedure.
I had a little procedure, which wasn't as little as they told me it was going to be. But, you know, when doctors tell you, you may experience some discomfort for a few weeks, what they mean is, if you're not high on heroin,
yeah,
it's going to hurt a lot, all right?
So you're still in pain? You said you have pain under your...
Well, I have numbness on the side. I had part of one of my lungs removed. And... you know, they go in with laparoscopic things and it's semi-robotic and they go in and it's kind of crazy what they do. And then they sew you up and they tell you go home and have fun.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just not fun for a while if you don't take all the drugs they give you. I mean, I don't dig taking, you know, painkillers. You know, they mess me up and I'm just not.
Yeah, I don't like them either.
I'm not that kind of person.
I had to take a Vicodin once or a half a Vicodin. I thought I was going to throw up.
Yeah, I it was Oxy that they gave me.
I'd be a horrible junkie.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I'd be like, what the fuck? Yeah. This is what I'm paying for to get drugs? This stuff?
Yeah.
No, I don't like that. Anyway, but I'm doing great now. I mean, we went out to dinner the other night. When was it? A couple nights ago?
Two nights ago.
Right.
We actually went out to dinner right before you went in. You were very nervous, yes, which I understand.
Was. Yes, and you only took me out because you told me, because you thought I was going to die.
I paid. I thought, usually we split, or no, I think we go back and forth, but I said, I'm getting this one. I think it was
so
your
kind.
Turn, but I thought,
yeah, it was
I'm
my
getting
turn,
it.
But
yeah.
You were going to get it because...
I'm going to get it because if he dies...
then you can at least say... I bought his last meal.
Yeah, and I won't feel bad. I would feel horrible.
I know you would.
If we split your last meal. And I talked about it on this podcast.
Oh, thank
you.
Yeah,
one of these episodes I opened talking about that. So it was Jim Clemente who I took out. We went for Chinese food here in Los Angeles. It was horrible.
It wasn't the best experience. We went to a place that we had both gone before, and it's under new management. It's not as good as it was.
We got thrown out again for staying too long.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be a social experience, right? You got to eat and leave. They throw everything at you at once.
Well, no, the guy didn't care. The waiter, we ordered soup, appetizers, and two entrees. An enormous amount of food. I'd be happy to show you the bill, how much I spent on Mike Di Clemente over here. And what happened was he brought the entree first.
Right.
And then a minute later, the soups and the appetizers, everything came out at once. And then you asked for rice, and that was an imposition.
Mm. Yeah, it was just a weird thing. But anyway, we've had great meals together, and we had one the other night at a place. Do you want to say where it was?
No, you can if you want. Yeah, sure.
It's called Osteria Mama, and it's great. It's on Melrose, and yeah, it was great food, and it was the first time I actually got in my car and drove somewhere to meet someone post-operation, and so it felt good to have that freedom again, because for a while I was staying home.
Yeah.
And if I had to go to an appointment, I was getting driven there. But so it was great. And then, you know, I drove here today, and that was also really, really nice to
just be out.
Well, you start, when you go through something like that, Ornie, you really start to appreciate just the...
Me?
The one, well, of course, I always appreciate you. How could I not?
Is that what it takes, a cancer scare?
I just want
to appreciate
know
me?
If I'm going to get a nod, though, because, you know, I recognize you. You know, do I get a nod? Yeah, there you go. I got a nod. You get a nod and it's sort of a little bit of a smile. Makes you feel a lot better.
That guy Matt in school, he was the coolest kid.
Really? And he did the nod?
He did the nod. And so I started doing the nod. Now I can't not do the nod.
No, it's funny. But there was a kid in my high school who was... the kindest, nicest, most empathetic guy I've ever met in my life. And I realized when he came into the room, no matter where we were, no matter what the tension was in the room or whatever, got everybody to relax and talk and stuff. And it was literally because he would break the ice. And I saw that and I recognized that as a sophomore in high school. And I said, I can do that. And, you know, because I was the smallest kid in the class. I was the youngest kid in the class. I had skipped up. And so I was never, like, you know, one of the cool guys.
Yeah.
But you know, by having seen that and seeing how it made people relax and made people feel better about themselves and about each other, I thought, well, I'm going to do that. And I did it. And when I graduated, you know, they have in the back of the yearbook, they have these things where they say the handsomest and the best hair and all that. Well, I didn't get any of those, but but I got outstanding personality.
Huh, I could see that.
Well, I it was a shock to me. I thought, oh, I'm being punked, you know, when I saw it.
There was, you didn't suspect anything? Nobody came up to you and said, I voted you for outstanding personality?
I had no idea. And what I think part of it was, I was also on the track team.
Anyway. It's all rigged. I don't know if you break your heart.
I must have paid somebody. But I was on the track team, right? And, you know, I was a little kid, and I remember on the first day of track practice, I went up to the track coach and said, I want a pole vault. And he looked at me and kind of laughed, and he says, you know, do your half-miler workouts, because everybody was a half-miler until he figured out if they were faster or slower. And then he put them into something. So I'd have to do the half-miler workout. And then he said after my workout, I could go and work out with the guys who were pole vaulting. And it was only one or two guys, and I joined them. And eventually I set the freshman record in the school. And then in the end, I was the MVP, well, really co-MVP for the track team, because there was a runner that was an MVP and a field event guy, and I was the field event guy. And I set the school record in the pole vault, and it stands today.
Really? What is it?
12 feet, 3 inches in high school. And
what do the people in the Olympics do? 16 feet?
Now they're up to, I mean, they're up to 19 feet. I don't know. The world record now is around 19 feet.
And it's the same size pole you're using in high school?
No, you use bigger poles.
There you go.
I know.
Yeah. I could not think of anything less I'd ever want to do in my life.
Than pole vaulting?
Yes.
It is cool. It's very technical, and you fly for a minute.
Yeah, but you have to put that stick in a thing in the ground,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you do. And a couple times, it's called a plant box. And one time
You missed it?
No, I didn't miss it. But they did not fix it to the ground. So when the pole bent, the bottom of it forced it out. And it just slammed me right down onto the cement.
See, that's why I don't...
Hospital.
Yeah.
And then another time, I basically broke the pole. You know, I ran through it and it just shattered. And I just saw this big, you know, jagged edge of the pole coming right from my chest. And I thought I was going to be impaled. But luckily, I didn't get impaled. But anyway, that was fun.
I can't imagine as a kid going home to your parents saying, Mom and Dad, we need to buy me a pole vault. I need my own pole.
Pole for pole vault.
Yeah, you don't share a pole, right? You show up like it's like pool.
Yes.
You got to show up. You got to put your pole together.
Can you believe this, though? When we started pole vaulting at my high school, we didn't bend poles.
What do you mean?
Just the poles before that were just straight.
Yeah.
And so you had to hit this box with going full speed with this pole, and it just yanked your shoulders back. And I'm still feeling it in my left shoulder, but
boy, you're a mess.
You literally had to, you know, swing your legs up and fight with that pole. It didn't bend and then shoot you up. It was literally just like sticking a straight rod into the ground and then lifting yourself up.
That sounds like more fun.
It was a lot more difficult. Anyway, eventually we were able to, we got some poles that bent because that was the new technology coming out. And eventually, I think, you know, it was 12-3 or 12-6, I think. 12-6 I did was the record that...
What high school is this?
John S. Burke Catholic High School in Goshen, New York. It was in...
There's a Goshen, Massachusetts.
Is there? Yeah. Well, there you go. There's a lot of...
Interesting.
Multiple...
Oh, I wanted to tell you
city
this.
City names, yes. What?
When are you done with your pole vault?
Yeah, if you
reminiscing.
Don't mind. Glory days, right?
When you were under and in the hospital, your brother was keeping me up to date.
Oh yeah,
a lot of joking back and forth.
Oh really?
Yeah, a lot of mocking.
At my expense.
Oh yeah.
Was I saying weird things when I was
no,
under
no, no.
Anesthesia
we were just
something?
Like. You know, I don't know what we said, but we would.
You probably said, "Is he going to take me out to dinner now?" When he gets out.
Yeah, he owes me a dinner. Is he alive? I was like, oh, no. Yeah, but it was nice of your brother to keep me updated.
Yeah, that's great.
Jim is a former FBI profiler. Let me ask you this. How come it's always after you pick your nose, you look around to see if somebody saw it?
Well, I think that's for people who pick their nose in public.
Mm.
You know, some people use a Kleenex and do it privately, and then they don't have to worry
they
about
do?
That.
They do? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think if you actually want my opinion about that behavior, I think what it is...
Risk-taking, right?
No, I think I think it's sort of habit, and they get lost in the moment, and then they realize in the middle of it, like, oh my God, somebody could have seen me.
Right.
Okay. Sort of like when somebody walks out of the bathroom, they always like check their pants, they pat their back, or when they get up in a restaurant, you know, when they're walking in public, it's like this nervous thing where they realize, you know, oh, my pants could be falling down, or, you know, my stomach could be sticking out, or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So I just think it's just...
Put your headsets on. We went out to dinner the other night, and I talked to you about this article that I read in the New York Times.
Okay.
And... You said we should discuss that on your podcast or on, we're trying to develop a podcast. You want to say the name?
Yeah, sure. Comedian versus Profiler.
And this would be a perfect story.
It would.
You know the phrase, possession is 9/10 of the law. Well, tonight, the story of one man who really took that to heart. After he moved into an iconic New York City hotel, authorities say he tried to steal it. That's right, the whole building. Eyewitness News reporter Jim Dolan.
Jim Dolan!
48-year-old Mickey Barreto
coming in
is
hot,
charged
Jim.
With fraud and contempt. He's accused of 24 crimes in all, but no one will ever accuse Mickey Barreto of lacking ambition.
Mickey, on a June afternoon in 2018, a man named Mickey Barreto checked into the New Yorker Hotel. He was assigned room 2565, a double-bed accommodation with a view of Midtown Manhattan, almost entirely obscured by an exterior wall. For one night stay, he paid $257. And he was a hotel guest that wouldn't leave.
The Manhattan District Attorney says Barreto tried to steal a hotel, not rob a hotel, not steal from a hotel. The DA says he tried to steal an iconic 42-story Manhattan hotel.
The New Yorker is located a block from Madison Square Garden and Penn Station. The New Yorker has been among the city's most, has never been among the city's most glamorous hotels, but it has long been its biggest, or one of its biggest. There's a huge New Yorker sign. You know where this is, right?
Yeah. And when you mentioned it the other day, you said it was the New Yorker, and I was like, no, that can't be, because Reverend Sun Young Moon bought the New
Yorker.
That's
right.
And I didn't know that they were actually still renting out rooms.
Yep. In fact, Muhammad Ali stayed there in 1972 after he fought at the Garden. Also, Nikola Tesla lived at the hotel for a decade. This is ABC News 7 in New York.
The New Yorker opened in 1930, an architectural masterpiece built during the Depression, and for half a century, it was where Manhattan's Tony celebrity and business elite would meet to eat and write it off. It survived all the trends and all the changes in the city, but it almost didn't survive Mickey Barreto.
This was a criminal scammer who was abusing a certain facet of the rent stabilization law.
Michael Tobin is a rent stabilization expert who talked to us about the quirk in New York's rent law that Barreto is accused of exploiting to gain a foothold, a permanent home in the New Yorker.
Checked into a hotel and then claimed residence and refused to leave.
And a judge ruled that Barreto could, in fact, stay in the hotel.
That's the biggest problem, that judge.
This already strange story took a really bizarre twist.
We're going to get into all of this. We could watch this whole report, but he checked in, and the next morning, instead of checking out, Jim, he went downstairs and he asked for a lease based on some obscure housing law.
Yeah.
Which, in New York City, never made sense to me.
Nah, but there's all sorts of, if you look at today, in California in particular, the laws that protect tenants, even illegal tenants, even tenants who literally break into your home and stay there, it's difficult to actually evict them.
Why is that?
It's
because, this is crazy. If people squat in your home,
it should be absolutely illegal and they should be put out immediately. But because there are so many bend over backwards to protect tenants' laws here in Los Angeles and in California in general. They have now, squatters have now been able to take advantage of these laws, and they're able to stay in places that literally they have no right to be in. It's just the most horrific thing. It makes me never want to own a place that I rent out.
I agree. In fact, my grandfather owned a building in Massachusetts, and I remember hearing the stories about how they had to collect money. And sometimes you had to hire somebody to, I remember hearing that, collect the money. I knew what that meant.
Yeah?
I knew I came from you don't mess around with us.
I guess not.
You know what I mean?
Well, this guy, you know, Mickey Barreto, so he...
Can I go back to what you were just saying? Because sure. I have something specific where I have a friend who couldn't get a woman out of his house that he was dating. It was his home. He had the deed to it. He paid the rent. She never paid rent. But because she had mail delivered there. And he had to pay her off to get her out.
Yeah, there's if you qualify under a certain amount of income, you have to pay them $25,000 to leave. If you have a certain higher income or something, it's only $15,000 that you have to pay. Mm-hmm. But it's outrageous. Right. I have a friend also who a friend of his said, "Look, I'm between places. I need to stay someplace for a couple of days." And immediately got mail sent there. And then he turned around and said, "Well, now you can't make me leave. And I want to stay." And he literally had to, it got to the point where this guy was so abusive that he literally had to call the police and have the guy arrested and then change all the locks and put all the stuff outside. I mean, it's just outrageous that you have to go through that.
Yeah. So this guy, Mickey Barreto, spent 5 years at this hotel.
5 years.
Rent-free.
For $200.57. I mean, it's outrageous. Can you imagine all the money they lost? If it's $200 a night times 365 times 5, that's a lot of math. That's a lot of money that he
stole. I didn't figure that out, but I should have. That would have been a good thing for me to say on the podcast. I would have sounded really smart.
Well, I'll tell you what. We could do it right now.
But wait a minute. It's more than... It's 200... 5 years ago, it was $200. I bet the going rate right now is probably $400, $500 a night for that hotel.
So let's average it $300. So 300 times 365 times 5 equals $547,500. $500,000 this guy stole.
This is why I've never wanted to own something and rent it, because of this reason. I'm not kidding. But lease your home. Yeah, I've heard there are stories about people renting an Airbnb and not leaving.
Right, I know. And this is something that it's people are really taking advantage, and it's horrible. And the law seems to protect them, which is outrageous. So in this case, when he got kicked out because he didn't pay for day two or day three, he then sued and he won. And this judge said, you know, you have to negotiate with him for a lease because this building was built before 1960 or whatever and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Well, the hotel refused to negotiate with him, so he just didn't pay rent.
Right.
Well, the real owners of that hotel is the Unification Church, which is a cult. Reverend Sun Yun Moon went to federal prison for tax evasion, I believe, years ago. But this cult, they were trying to grow themselves, so they would literally have these mass marriages. They would rent out the Madison Square Garden, and 20,000 people, 10,000 couples, would get married at once,
right,
on the same day. Now, did they even know each other? I don't know. But these were all people who were in the cult. They were all people who were out on the streets selling flowers or begging for donations, and all those dollar donations were what paid, I don't know, like $100 million for the New Yorker Hotel.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So this guy actually had the balls to say, you owe me $15 million because I'm actually the owner. Because when he couldn't get a lease, he went back and he filed basically a fraudulent lease saying that unit,
right,
2565, was his. And because it's a hotel, it's not a co-op, the law doesn't separate out the different
rooms. We'll get into that. Let me just say this about Mr. Barreto, and you can take the headsets off if you want. The story of how, I'm quoting the New York Times article, the hotel guest that wouldn't leave, the story of how Mr. Barreto, a California transplant, of course, somehow we're tied into this.
Yeah.
With a taste for wild conspiracy theories and sometimes a tenuous grip, that's a loose grip, on reality, gained and lost the rights to room 2565 might sound implausible. Another tale from a man who claims, without evidence, to be the first cousin 11 times removed of Christopher Columbus's oldest son. There's a lot to break down there.
Why wouldn't he just say 12 times removed from Christopher Columbus? Why would he say from Christopher Columbus's son? That's just so bizarre, because that's only one removed from Christopher Columbus. So why wouldn't you just add one more? If you're going to go 11 times removed, you might as well go 12 times removed.
Because there's three parts of this and all of them are crazy. First cousin, 11 times removed, oldest son, and Christopher Columbus. It's
insanity.
The New Yorker Hotel opened in 1930 to great fanfare, the largest in the city, also second largest in the world. Mm. It was an opulent hotel of the future with, ready for this, 92 telephone operators, a power-generating plant with a radio with four channels in each room.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Like that was a hotel of the future. And then, it has a very prominent street-level sign that says New Yorker.
It's cool.
But it also has one way up on top of the hotel, which is part of the skyline, in huge letters that says New Yorker on it. So it is an iconic, New York City skyline building.
Yep. So Reverend Moon...
His son
is running the cult now.
Is
and it's
he?
Something to do with guns. It's like a gun cult where all sit there in service with their automatic guns.
Oh.
I believe.
Isn't that special?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Reverend Moon, a self-proclaimed messiah who bought the hotel in 1976 and made it his organization's headquarters. And there's still tenants living there that are part of Moon's.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
And they get a certain amount of it as tax exempt because of that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this guy, when he recorded his fake lease, actually they lost their tax exempt status because he's not a 501c3.
Yeah.
So
this guy Barreto, what level of compassion do we have to have for perhaps him having a mental illness? Because the author of this article in the New York Times, who actually interviewed him, said he vacillates between lucid and unstable. He said he experiences panic attacks and seizures, but insisted he had never been diagnosed with mental illness, even as he claimed to be the chief of an Indian tribe he founded in Brazil.
Right. There you go. Well, there's a little bit of narcissism in that, I suppose. But yeah, could he have a mental illness? Yes. But when that starts hurting other people, then we have to stop it cold, right? The law should have prevented this from happening. A judge who without regard to reality, said that he deserved a lease in a hotel. A hotel is a unique situation, and especially in New York City. You're right. When he first moved in 2018, the room was $200 a night. But, boy... prices have gone up significantly, especially since COVID.
Yeah.
And, it's difficult to find a hotel room for under $400 in New York.
Yeah. When I started to read this article, I thought this was going to be like a COVID person that claimed that they didn't have to pay, didn't have to, look for rent exemption. But yeah, this, what I am shocked by, and should I be shocked by, I'm shocked he wasn't killed.
Oh, what do you mean?
Meaning that the owners... This is, it's owned by the, is it still owned by the Moon family? I think it is.
I believe it is, yeah.
Yeah, and they have ties to North Korea, and
that will play in the end, won't it?
Yeah, sort of like, are they funneling money to North Korea? Because he was originally from North Korea. But, people get killed over a lot less. So when you say it's $500,000, it's actually a lot more than that. Because if you had invested that money with compound interest... or just put in the S&P and watched it grow 20% in the last few years, it would be worth, it would double or triple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this guy, you know, got away with a major theft, and I hope that his defenses don't work. Do you want to talk about those defenses?
Well, I want to talk about the law first, and then we'll talk about why he tried to claim the entire hotel and did claim it and got away with it. But so he and his boyfriend were staying in this hotel. They opened their laptops, and they explored whether the New Yorker was subject to this rule, this rent stabilization rule that's really obscure, which I don't understand. Essentially, if you stay in certain hotels that were built before 1968?
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
69.
You've lived in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have too. And one of the things that, one of the driving forces behind rent stabilization in New York is that they wanted to protect older people who are in buildings in neighborhoods that all of a sudden blow up. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, it happens all the time. Where, you know, the Upper West Side is kind of crappy, and then all of a sudden, it's the place to be. Rents go through the roof.
Right.
And these old people who've been living there for 20, 30 years can't afford to be in their own in their own apartment.
Right.
So they have these rent stabilization laws, which prevent rents from rising more than 2 or 3% per year, and you have to offer longer-term leases and things like that. They're very specific. And so that's the mindset that put these laws in place. So for older buildings, which a lot of times were populated by older people, they wanted to protect them. So they put this law in place, not thinking that somebody was going to try to apply this to a hotel situation, because you don't actually have residency in that hotel. But this judge found that he did have residency, that guy had residency, which is just outrageous.
That's what happens. He gets kicked out of that hotel. So he overstays, or he tries to stay. He stays for a night, goes down in the morning, goes up to the hotel front desk, says, I'd like to speak to the manager. I'd like a 6-month lease. This is according to the law. They said, we don't do leases, which, of course, how would they know about this obscure law?
What they could have done is said, okay, a 6-month lease, but it's going to be, you know, $400
a
night.
No. He wanted it for $88 a week.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous.
And they said, that's ridiculous. So they evicted him. They took his stuff out and his possessions. And he went to see this judge. And I can't find the name of the judge. I want to say his name.
Probably hiding.
Yeah. No. It was, gosh, where is it? Anyway, so the judge sided with him and said, no, you have to give him residence. So he went back, took possession. That's the big word.
Right.
Possession of this room and never left. And the hotel said, here's a lease. They gave him a lease, but it wasn't to his liking because it wasn't the $88 a week or whatever reduced, you know, rent. And he just stayed there. And he had access to everything, the room cleaning, room service. He ate in the diner downstairs. And they couldn't get rid of the guy. And then he wanted his name on the room.
Right.
This is what you were saying before, and I cut you off.
Right?
The deed.
Yeah, he wanted his name on the deed.
Mm-hmm.
And since the building is not separated into rooms, he claimed, well, then I get my name on the deed to the entire building, which is outrageous.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about a building that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
And he wants to get it because he paid $200.57, which is, it's outrageous. And the law should recognize the outrageousness of that. Instead, the judge went by the letter of the law, which clearly he misinterpreted.
Yeah. The judge's name was Stoller, ruled in Barreto's favor. Boy, this sounds like such a character, doesn't it?
Mickey Barreto?
Yeah. I mean, how is this not a movie already? Not only agreed with his arguments, he even cited the same case law as Mr. Barreto and ordered the hotel to restore the petitioner to the possession, that's the bad word, possession, of the subject's premises. So he went back to room 2565. And I wanted to read that line about why the hotel is considered a single unit, which is really interesting. So,
A hotel isn't like a co-op. It isn't. One owner owns the entire building. and they lease out daily these rooms on a daily basis. And so it is only one building. It's not separated into properties like a co-op or a condominium would be.
Right. So when a condominium or that type of residence, a apartment building, they say we have 25 units. Here are the list of the units.
Right.
This is considered a single entity. So when we went to the judge and he said, hey, judge, I want to put my name. He said, you can't put your name because it's a single entity. So the judge suggested that he put the entire single entity of the whole hotel under his name. And so
this judge is insane.
Right.
And well, if the judge said he should do that, then that's going to be a defense in his favor in this criminal charge.
Yep. Yep. And so then he filed, and this is another part where you like, what can you trust with the institution? So there's a whole department that takes deeds or filings and processes them. They're so overwhelmed that they can't possibly read everything, so they take it at face value. Okay.
Right.
He must be the owner. He filed it.
He filed this, and it's a fraudulent instrument. And I know you asked me, what does that mean, fraudulent instrument? An instrument is simply a document that has separate powers, basically. Okay. Like a will.
Yeah.
A lease. A deed. What other ones? A contract.
Yeah.
So if it's a fake lease, if it's a fake deed, then it grants you fake powers, which is fraud. You know, when you're trying to assert those powers over somebody who actually owns it.
Right.
So the actual owner of the building, which is, you know, still apparently in the hands of the
Unification
Sun
Yun
Moon family or the Unification Church, that they... He was trying to get them to pay him $15 million, and he was trying to get rent from everybody who was staying in the hotel.
Right, he tried to collect rent, and he tried to have their bank accounts changed over into his name.
It's unbelievable.
Across the country, I'm reading from the New York Times article, it is not uncommon for overworked municipal workers or recorders to accept proper property filings under the assumption that they are legitimate.
Right.
So it's just sort of like, why would somebody, you know... Yeah, and for real estate speculators to take advantage of, and they assume that that's not going to happen. I've heard where people can steal the deed to your house.
Yeah, well, I know when I've bought houses, you have to go through an entire process. You have to stand there, and you have a closing agent and a title company, and
the title company
searches who actually owns it, and they register it, and it's all this very, very complicated stuff. But you have to prove who you are, and you have to prove that you paid for the thing.
Right.
It shouldn't be that just a rubber stamp, and that's probably apparently what happened here.
So this Judge Stoller said, listen, you have a right to the whole place. So Mr. Barreto and Mr. Hannon, I think that's his boyfriend, visited the department's Lower Manhattan offices. Mr. Barreto asked the clerk about putting room 2565 in his name as a new homeowner would. But he was told it was impossible because a hotel, unlike apartments, was not split up in city record by rooms. The property, this is the New York Times, had one entity on file, the hotel itself, identified in city records as block 758, lot 37. So citing the judge's order, Mr. Barreto filled out paperwork declaring his ownership of that. This is absurd.
Yeah.
And got away with it. He got the deed in his name.
And that was filing a false instrument because he used fraud. He knew he didn't own that. He knew he had no right to do it. But yet he did that. And we'll see now. I mean,
did he? The judge said you can file for it. I think the fraud was he was evicted a second time and he still claimed he was the owner after they said you're not the owner. I mean, he even reached out to Wyndham, who's the management company
really?
Of it. Yeah. And said, I own this now.
Well, that's all right. So maybe they're saying that's the fraud. Well, what he would have to have gotten some kind of benefit from that representation, I guess. Did they let him back in the hotel at that point?
No,
he was already kicked out.
He's been evicted. And then this is from the AP said, where is this? Because they actually arrested him about a month ago.
I know he tried to renovate the entire 25th floor. Like he tried to take all the doors off and join rooms together and things like that.
Yeah,
he had contractors
not?
Come in.
He owned it, Jim. Why wouldn't he do that?
Where did he get the money to do this? Probably all the money that he saved from paying rent. Not paying rent for 5 years.
No, he would take it out of the bank account that he fraudulently transferred into
his didn't really change the bank account.
No, they did. No. And he also tried to get revolving doors downstairs and clean up the outside. I mean, he had good intentions.
Nice guy.
Yeah, he really did.
Oh, okay. Well, then they should have given him the hotel.
On Wednesday, this is going back a month, he was arrested in... Would you say?
No, I said maybe they should have given him the hotel then, if he had good intentions.
Would have been nicer. Yeah. Would have turned it into a nice little pad. On Wednesday, this is going back a month, he was charged with filing false property records. Barreto, 48, says he was surprised when police showed up at his boyfriend's apartment with guns and bulletproof shields.
Right.
As far as he was concerned, it should have been a civil case, not a criminal one. Hey, we'll decide what it is, Barreto.
Yeah. And he says he thought it was a Valentine's Day prank, that these were fake cops.
Yeah, that
and
his boyfriend.
They were going to be strippers. And then he noticed there were some female cops, and he was not, you know, happy about that, and he realized they were real. But, you know, that sounds like such a character. But what's really the most outrageous here is that he was arrested. You know, you're given your one call. You know who he called?
President of the United States.
He did call the White House to talk to the President of the United States, because he said, that what he was actually doing, his entire plan, was to prevent money from going to Reverend Sun Myung Moon and the Unification Church, which he said is still associated with North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And he said any money that gets sent to North Korea, of course, helps their nuclear development program.
Right.
So actually, he is personally responsible for saving the world.
So this guy
has a little bit of grandiosity maybe attached to it.
Little bit?
Yeah, I think so.
I've been accused of that with the head nod. All I do is give a head nod to strangers. I've been accused of grandiosity.
Well, I think those head nods will actually save the world.
What chance does this guy ever have of checking into a hotel ever again?
Never.
Nobody
I
would.
Hope not.
Can they refuse?
Sure they can.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's you can't discriminate, but if somebody is convicted of fraud, well...
Now, Jim, you're a lawyer, so you say.
I am. Yeah, so I say.
Nobody's ever seen your degree, so who knows?
Well, I do think people have actually seen my degree.
I don't know. I've never met anybody that's seen it.
Are not the arbiter of whether or not I am actually a lawyer. But go ahead, ask me whatever you want to ask me.
Do you ever hear me talk about that, the arbiter of comedy? When people say under a video, they're like, you're not funny. You're not funny. Oh, you're the arbiter of comedy.
You say that?
Well, yeah, because
we use the same word.
You can say, we're fist bumping it. You can say, hey, I don't find you funny. But you can't across the board. You're not
You can't objectively say somebody isn't funny.
You know,
because it's very subjective.
You know what
people find funny.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. You know what I love? To do on YouTube is you can't block people from seeing your videos if they write bad comments, but you can hide them from your channel, which I love. So what happens is that they can still watch your videos and they can still comment under your videos, but guess what? They're the only ones that see their comment, which is the way it should be.
Yeah.
You have these thoughts. If you're going to be mean and malicious, and I don't mind criticism, but if somebody is,
just doing it for the hell of doing it. Yeah, trying to make
inaccurate or trying to troll or get a rise out of me or whatever it is, I hide them, and then only that crazy person can see it.
Great.
Yeah.
So you were asking about me being a lawyer?
Yes. So they released this Beretta guy on his own recognizance.
Mm.
Does that mean he didn't have to pay bail? What does that mean?
Yeah, RRR is pretty much, that's it.
What is wrong with our legal system? Seriously, what's wrong with it?
Well, I think they've gotten rid of bail in New York City because they said it was unfair to poor people. They were staying in jail and rich people were staying out of jail. So they said, no more bail.
But why don't they... Okay, so then this. So if this Beretta guy has $10,000, then make him put $1,000 as bail. If somebody has $1 million, make him put $100,000. Like, you have to do something. This guy will either flee the country or just keep he's a scam artist. And again, he scams the system by not having to pay bail. I'm tired of it. I agree.
I think bail is an important part of the justice system. And I think on both ends of this country, in New York and California, they've pretty much destroyed the justice system with these kinds of extreme laws. Yeah. I'm not some, you know, overly conservative person.
I don't think you're conservative at all.
I do believe.
Maybe you are.
I really believe that the justice system is there to protect the innocent citizens, not just to protect the rights of the bad people who commit crimes.
Right.
And it has, that pendulum has swung way over to the side of just protecting the rights of the people who have been accused of crimes.
And when you protect their rights, you're not protecting our rights.
No, you're not. No.
It's
a sad situation.
Do you have anything else to say as a former FBI profiler about this guy, his about character?
Well, yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that.
Go ahead.
So here's a guy who feels entitled. So his boyfriend apparently told him, hey, there's some weird, quirky loophole in the law. Let's take advantage of it.
Right.
He goes to town. In other words, he doesn't say, all right, let's try it. Oh, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm going to file a lawsuit. I hate when people use the justice system and the civil court system to hurt other people, like maliciously. And people do that all the time. You see it a lot of times in matrimonial actions. You see it a lot of times in just revenge actions. And this guy, for his own benefit, all he wanted to do was take advantage. Mm. Now, if he actually thought, well, I am coming here and I thought this would help me and I will do whatever I can to just get my rights and all that without hurting somebody else, then I would probably be more willing to side with him. But clearly, he was just trying to take advantage in a way that significantly hurt this business, right? To take one room out of circulation, mm-hmm, and to require all these services. And like you said, to take all that money out of their pocket and they couldn't invest it. They couldn't reinvest it in fixing the place. They couldn't do it, invest it and make more money off of it. It's all detrimental. It's detrimental to them and it's detrimental to society. And, you know, this gives the New Yorker a bad name, too. I mean, people aren't going to want to stay there, and it's dredged up old things.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I do, because...
No, because in the article, it mentions they give free HBO. How could you turn that down?
I didn't realize they were advertising. There you go.
You know, the other thing is that... boy, I can point...
Yeah, but what I was going to say is this is a malicious personality defect. This is something that, you know, is intentional.
But they should also sue him for the cost of getting attorneys, the time they had to spend doing this. You know, don't forget that. Also, one of his filings caused them to lose like a $3 million tax break that they had.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure that I want to give them a tax break anyway because I don't believe it's an actual religion.
Well, who are we to judge?
And I don't think religions should necessarily get tax breaks. I don't. So that's just my personal view because... you know, when you have an organization that's constantly amassing real estate and wealth, that doesn't sound like a not-for-profit. Yeah. If they had to give every penny that they were worth out to the poor every year, then I think they should get tax-exempt status. Mm-hmm. If they're amassing any kind of wealth, period, I don't think they should. That's my feeling.
Here's a question I have about his personality. I say this to myself all the time about criminals, because this guy's a criminal, right?
Yeah, well, he hasn't been convicted yet, but
he's an accused criminal. I've convicted him.
I know you're the arbiter of criminal.
The court of what's wrong with Orny Adams.
There you go.
But these guys, he's intelligent. Why don't they use his brain to make money legally?
I've said that before as well. I had one case. Guy named Menachem Prihar, and he was from Israel, and he used his brain to scam and pull all sorts of really elaborate cons against, you know, against airlines. He was like, catch me if you can. Huh. He was like that guy.
Yeah.
And he actually stole hundreds of millions of dollars. And I think we charged him with $480 million worth of fraud, bank fraud and government fraud in 10 separate conspiracies. And eventually we convicted him and he went to jail. But I was fascinated by how intricate his plans were. And you know, he would try to get a loan on a construction loan, mm-hmm. right, for a building. And he would say to the bankers, well, I'll tell you what, it's in Florida. I'll fly you down because I have my private jet license, yep. and I'll fly you down. So he'd rent a jet and fly the person down. Now, they fly around circles around this big construction site.
Okay.
And he'd say, we could land there and you could do your inspections. Or, you know, this waitress right here, this hostess, this stewardess, she's free this weekend. We could fly down to the Cayman Islands and you can have fun with her. And so they flew down to the Cayman Islands. They never inspected the property. In fact, it wasn't his property that they were flying around.
Mm-hmm.
It was all fraud. And then he got the loan. And then when the loan came due, he just put Polaroid pictures of this guy with the stewardess in a little envelope and he sent it to him. Here's my payment. That's what he would do. And then he would just compound these things and he would get more money from those people that he was extorting. And then it was all a big elaborate scheme and he could have been a huge businessman.
Yeah. And where's he now?
Well, I think he got sent back to Israel.
But why do they do it? Is it the kick of getting away with it?
I think so. Yeah. I think that, you know, when you're a psychopath, you know, they're thrill seekers, psychopaths generally, and they always want stimulation. So for them, it's a lot more fun to get away with something than it is to actually do something legitimate.
Hmm. All right, let's close on this.
Let's do that.
Let's do this. Jim Clemente is my guest. By the way, if you want to keep in touch, the email is whatswrong@ornieadams.com. I want to thank Eric Stoltz for mastering the audio for this podcast. Awesome. Now, Eric is a guy that actually mastered the audio for More Than Loud, my special, Takes the Third, and Path of Most Resistance, my first one.
Really? I don't know if I've seen that.
Eric, well, I'll give you a copy. Eric, he was an absolute nobody. Yeah, when I met him, he was just a punk kid outside.
And who were you?
He's, I don't know. I'm the 11th stepson of Christopher Columbus once removes real brother, whatever. Don't ask who I am. Anyway, Eric is helping me again. I appreciate that.
Yeah, Eric.
I want to thank everyone that subscribes to this podcast. The people that watch this video, they can watch this video tomorrow on my Patreon page. Awesome. It will be up on YouTube in a few weeks. You know how that works, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And also the audio is available immediately on Apple and on Spotify.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler, producer, podcaster. He's done it all. He had cancer. He had a heart attack.
All right. Well, that's not an accomplishment.
And he had rabies.
Almost. Yeah.
You were bit by a fox.
I was bit by a rabbit fox. Yes.
It was rabbit. That's why I wanted to ask.
It was rabbit. Yes, it was rabbit. So I don't know if you actually have rabies until it gets to your brain, but once you have it, it's 100% fatal.
No, there is one woman living right now
who has it.
Yeah, she's had it for 12 years.
How has she done that? No brain?
Wow, she's a woman. Don't question the power of women.
Okay.
She's remarkable.
Wow.
Yeah, didn't... here's the thing. If you get bit by an animal, you should immediately wash there with soap, use rubbing alcohol, and you have to get these rabies shots. Did you get the painful ones where they stick it into your...
They gave me like 4 around the bite on my leg, and then like 9 in my butt cheeks and in my arms.
How long did this take?
And
months?
It was like, no, they do that all. They do it on the first day, the 7th day, the 14th day, and the 28th day. So you have to get these 4 times. And it's the most painful shit in the world.
Wow.
I hated it. I hated it.
How did they know the fox was rabid?
Well, they got it. They took it and they sectioned its brain and they see rabies in the brain. You know, it's like they're...
You shot the fox,
mouth.
Right?
I did shoot the fox.
Did you? How many shots did it take to hit the fox?
Well, I shot him once. Once it went through sort of his right shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, another one center of mass, and then one, you know, behind the ears. You know. Because I'm from the Bronx.
Oh, really? You took it. You took it out. Did you shoot it more than once?
I shot him three times.
You unloaded your clip on a Fox?
First of all, it's not a clip. It's a magazine. Clips are in machine guns.
Magazines I know, but it's on the streets. We call it the
clip.
Okay,
I got
hip-hop.
It. But I had a lot more than just three rounds in my Glock.
It's the only time you've pulled your service revolver.
It's not.
In a Fox.
It's not the only time I've pulled it. It's the only time I've fired it at a living being.
Yeah. So you had PEP, post exposure prophylaxis.
Prophylaxis.
Condoms.
No.
Prophylactics.
I wasn't prophylaxis.
Yeah. It's one of the it prevents rabies 100%.
Well, I guess. I mean, it worked for me.
Were you scared that you might still get rabies?
Well, once the guy told me, he said, you're going to have to take these shots. And I was like, can't we wait and see if I actually get rabies? And he said, no, it's 100% fatal. I said, shoot me up, dude.
Right. And once the onset of it happening, it's a painful death.
He tried to give me Dilaudid, right? Dilaudid, which is a narcotic. It's like, Sherlock Holmes used it.
Okay.
But anyway, Dilaudid, and I'm like, no, look, I'm on duty. I carry a gun. I can't have narcotics in my system. You know, they give you tests all the time.
Huh.
So he said, all right, and he rolled up a towel, and he said, bite down on this. And I was like, okay, this is serious, I guess. And then he started. The reason why it's painful is it's like Jell-O, and he puts it in a hypodermic, and they pump this thing in. You know, my ankle swelled up to the size of a softball.
Is it a thick needle?
Yeah, it's a thick needle with a lot of, thick, gunky stuff, and it feels like it's tearing your tissues apart. But it has to block the nerves. That's where it travels up the nerves.
Was the Fox bite painful?
Well, at first I didn't realize it was actually biting me because it was just so bizarre. It happened so fast, and it was, like, attached to my ankle. I was like, what the fuck is this? I thought it was a horny cat first.
Oh.
But then I realized, no, this thing is actually biting me. And I slammed it against the car. It wouldn't let go. I had to drag it into my garage and hit it in the head with a friggin' shovel before it would actually let go. And then it tried to attack my dog, and that's when
Wait a minute, you hit it with a shovel before you shot it or after you shot
it? Before, to get him off my ankle.
Oh, I would have pulled the gun right away.
Well, yeah.
Where was the gun? On your hip?
Yes.
Yeah?
Let's say I did pull my gun.
Yeah?
And I shot him.
Yeah?
On my ankle.
Yeah?
Don't you think my foot would have had holes in it?
No. You shoot the body of the fox, not your foot.
It's all over the place. It's moving around. It's not static. It's not a piece of paper. It's like, doing that kind of stuff.
All right, don't get so defensive. So, do you know what the DSM-5 is?
Yeah, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychological Association.
Of Mental Disorders, the fifth edition.
The fifth edition.
What edition were you on at the
We were
FBI?
At 4R or something like that when I was there.
I don't know what the TR stands for.
Total Revision.
Okay. Oh, you're smart. Okay. It's a standard classification of mental disorders used by the mental health professionals in the United States. Yes. So I was reading about rabies because I wanted to know, do you have to be bit? I'm now up until 1 o'clock in the morning reading this stuff, by the
way. You don't have to be bit. Like, there's one woman who had a bat caught in her hair and it scratched her and she got it.
Right. It's the saliva.
Yeah. Well, saliva, but it's, saliva's all over the body too.
So not in the United States because we get our dogs vaccinated, but in other countries like India, rabies is transmitted mostly by dog bites, dogs in the street. And there's something called, do you know what cultural bound syndromes are?
Cultural bound syndromes.
You're going to find out.
I don't know, but I would love to. I'm learning something. Do you know what Orny Adams?
Puppy pregnancy syndrome is, PPS. It's a psychosomatic illness in humans brought on by mass hysteria. People suffering from PPS believe that shortly after being bitten by a dog, puppies are conceived within their abdomen. This is said to be especially likely.
Come on, you're kidding.
If the dog is sexually excited at the time of the attack. Victims are said to bark like dogs and have reported being able to see puppies inside them when looking at water or hear them growling in the abdomen.
When looking at water?
Yes. Yes.
What do you mean, looking at water?
Men will give birth to the puppies through their penis, which doctors offer oral cures for, which they claim will dissolve.
Oral cures for penis delivery of puppies?
The witch doctor.
What? Where are you reading this stuff?
This
came from Russia, didn't it?
No, this
cannot be real.
I hope I'm not being hoaxed. I'll be embarrassed if I'm reading a real hoax right here on what's wrong with Orny Adams.
Men are delivering puppies through their penis, and doctors give them an oral cure.
This is a very specific area.
And you read this in The Onion?
No, this was in the DSM-5.
All right, look. The DSM-5 has gone off the deep end, if that's in the DSM-5.
Which doctors offer oral cures, which they claim will dissolve the puppies, allowing them to pass through the digestive system and be excreted without knowledge of the patient. So these people actually believe this.
So these people, and there's more than one of them, I'm assuming?
Yes, a whole village.
Some kind of mass hysteria?
Yes.
A whole village in India. I'm going to stay away from India because I don't want to have that.
Do you want to hear some more syndromes? Oh, as God. Described in DSM-5 Total Revision?
I cannot believe that's in DSM-5.
It is.
Puppy, what is it called? Puppy.
PPS, Puppy Pregnancy Syndrome. Men think they're pregnant with puppies.
Now I agree with you in your first statement at the beginning of this podcast. We have lost it as a species.
Well, this is...
We have lost... When PPS actually exists, if that's actually in DSM-5, TR...
It is.
I don't believe it right now, but maybe
I'm
wrong.
What do you want to bet? Want to bet a beer?
Oh,
want
to bet a Peroni? Beer? All right. Let's do that.
Scientists investigate something called, this is DSM-5 TR, Total Revision. I think we all know the TR stands for Total Revision.
Stendhal syndrome. What?
Stendhal syndrome.
Stendhal.
This is an Italian cultural bound syndrome.
Well,
you're from Italy.
Do I have it?
You might. Fainting caused by great art. Scientists are trying to establish whether there really is such a phenomenon as Stendhal syndrome, after which, where's page 5? Oh my God, is this podcast over? There's no 5. Oh, here we go.
All right.
Jeez, a lot of notes here. Giddiness and confusion supposedly caused when one looks at great works of art. How about this one?
I just was at the Broad the other day, and I was pretty giddy and confused by some of the art, so maybe I do have that Stendhal syndrome.
Yeah.
I didn't pass out, though, but, you know, I could.
Yeah. Yeah, it could. If you go to Newfoundland, I could see this happening to you, and you experience sleep paralysis, it might be old hag syndrome. I'm reading the first sentence. The working version of this manual, the DSM-4, specifies 25 syndromes. Okay, so this is... It's a type of sleep paralysis in Newfoundland, old hag syndrome, in which one is visited by what appears to be a rather unpleasant old hag sitting on one's chest at night. So you wake up...
Oh, my God. I interviewed when I was on the Bank Robbery Squad in New York, which was also in the FBI, which is also the Violent Crime Squad, and... We would get all the threat cases, and I had to go out with my buddy Jim Fitzgerald. I'm going to tell him about this because this is amazing.
Yeah.
We interviewed this young lady who was writing threatening letters to Rudy Giuliani and the Pope. This was before Rudy Giuliani became a lunatic.
Was it Mick Jagger in the bathroom?
Mick Jagger was in the closet.
Whoa!
She put a Band-Aid on the closet to keep him in there. But she
well, you
said,
know what? He is skinny. He might not have the strength to break through a Band-Aid.
Anyway, she literally said to me, do you have any idea what it's like to have Leona Helmsley sitting on your chest menstruating?
Well,
and I said, you know what? I can actually say I have no idea what that's like. But she had that syndrome.
Look at that syndrome. It's old hag syndrome.
I guess Leona Helmsley could be described as an old hag.
Yeah. If you went to New Guinea, wild man syndrome, in which males become hyperactive, clumsy, kleptomaniacal. So they start stealing. Feels like an excuse. New Guinean men? New Guinea.
New Guinea.
Yeah. DSM-4
defines...
There's
more of these?
DSM-4. four defines cultural bounce syndromes as recurrent, locally specific patterns of aberrant behavior and troubling experiences that may or may not be linked to a particular diagnostic category.
Yeah, but you know what this sounds like to me? It sounds like the result of lore. It sounds like this kind of stuff may be passed down over time. You know, the chupa, whatever it's called.
Chupacura,
that thing that bit your leg and gave you rabies? Yeah, in Mexico or whatever. Chimichurra, whatever it is.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's called. But that, I think maybe it's some kind of lore. Like, you know, like the fireside ghost stories that we tell or we hear when we're kids, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that these kind of things kind of get into the culture.
But they actually believe this.
Well, but they wouldn't you believe that it, you know, if you're out on a camping trip and you're in a tent at night and the fire's now out and you hear all these creepy sounds, mm-hmm. that it could be, you know, Cropsey Lake guy, that was the guy that in my neighborhood went out and killed kids or something. You know, I believe
it seems deeper than that. This is in DSM-5. Well, yeah, there's not a section in DSM-5 of campfire stories.
It needs another total revision if that's it.
I found one that
penis puppy.
Oh, Jim.
Delivery.
I found one that I suffer from.
Oh, yeah.
I found one. Yes.
Oh, my God. And you're going to tell the world about
this? Yes! Breaking news, everybody. There's an East Asian phenomenon, excuse my pronunciation, Jiko Shishen Kyofu, the phobia that one's own glance will displease or offend other people.
There you go. And you know what? This is something that I talked about repeatedly when I taught interview and interrogation, because a lot of people think that gaze aversion, if I can't look in somebody's eyes, I'm lying to them.
Yeah.
But when you have a culture like this, when you have a phenomenon like that, where you feel like if I glance at somebody, it's disrespectful or it's going to be interpreted badly, then you avert your gaze out of respect. So you have to know those cultural things if you're going to actually try to discern whether somebody's lying to you when you're talking to them.
I find myself often given the head nod and I see displeasure.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of displeasure from people.
Really?
I ruin days with my head nod. Wow. I find that my energy in general sometimes just brings the room down. I don't even have to gaze.
Have you tried like altering it? What if you just said hello instead of a head nod?
Well, then I look like a crazy for hi. I mean, I
do that all the time.
I assume
I say hi to people.
I'm being recognized all the time. A taxi driver in Japan who can't look into his rearview mirror for fear that he'll meet with passengers' eyes. And a young woman who dropped out of society and became a solitary farmer out of the belief that her particular glance would deeply wound people.
Mm. Well, she might have superpowers. But that's amazing that you found that. Did you explain to your significant other that there's actually a syndrome that you're actually diagnosable and you're not responsible?
Well, Jim, we haven't had the conversation yet, but believe me, I will be citing the DSM-5 TR.
TR.
Yeah, the total revision.
Yeah, tell her it's the total revision.
Yeah, it's the total revision. This is I'm written about in a medical journal. I have my glance upsets days. I used to say nobody goes to lunch with Orny Adams and leaves there feeling good about themselves. You know what I mean? There's a dose of reality. There's a dose of what's wrong with Orny Adams. A dose of what's wrong with the world, Jim.
I actually enjoy going to lunch with you.
I know, but you're
rare.
We should
go to lunch now.
I'd love to.
Let's do it.
But let's do one more and then let's bring it home.
Okay.
And I want to thank you, the listeners. Keep in touch. What's wrong at OrnyAdams.com. And don't send bizarre emails. Please. I don't want to spend my
day. Send them.
Clemente, shut up.
No, he doesn't think that most emails are bizarre.
No, most are great.
Yeah.
In fact, Jim, which is upsetting to me, is I'm now being bombarded with so much correspondence and love that I don't have the time to respond like I once did. And that's upsetting to me because I do believe everybody that takes the time to reach out, I should give them my glare.
You are the limiting factor, though. It's only one of you. I think maybe AI will help you.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
One of the most known culturally bound syndromes is the KORO, K K-O-R-O. Okay. I believe this is something Jim Clemente may suffer from.
Oh.
A patient is convinced that protruding bodily organs, such as the male genitalia or female nipples, are retracting or disappearing into his or her body. Individuals experiencing this delusion, finally, they use the word delusion,
yes,
are furthermore morbidly afraid that this retraction will inevitably result in their death.
Well, Orny, I can honestly say that's not a problem. Thank you for suggesting that it could be a problem, but nah.
Well, some physicians have said that the male genitalia is actually not retracting, but the men are putting on so much weight that their penises just look smaller. Episode 110, what's wrong with Orny Adams?
A lot. I mean, yeah, a lot.
Thank you to Jim Clemente, who's got a ton of... name your podcast again, because I keep changing.
Real Crime Profile.
Yep.
And Best Case, Worst Case. And soon, we are going to do a podcast together.
I've been ready to do this forever.
But, you know, I've had a lot of stuff
surgeries
going on.
And diseases.
Not just that. It's just
you've rabies.
But I've been very busy. And now I'm freeing myself up with a chunk of time so I can do this podcast with you, because I really want to do it. And I think it's going to be fun for people, because it's going to be the lighter side of crime.
Is it going to be like this podcast, discussing that?
It's going to be like discussing that case. Yeah, it's going to be crazy criminals and insane laws and cases that are just bizarre, and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And fun.
I'm ready for it. Thank you, Jim Clemente. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week. And listen, if you go to a supermarket looking into the camera and you don't want one of the samples, then just move on. Move on. That's what's wrong with the world. We've come to the point now where samples, free food, isn't good enough for people. I'm tired of this crap.
Amen.